The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the president of Birch Grove Consulting and a guru when it comes to the federal budget, what it means for contractors, the patterns of spending, and also just a keen observer of the procurement community. How's that for an induction, Ray?
Oh, thank you very much, Roger.
It's great to have you here. Last week on the show, I had Bill, our mutual friend Bill Gormley, on, and we talked a lot about the end of the fiscal year and that sort of thing. So I thought maybe with our show, I'd get your take on the fourth quarter and what it means to companies, and also just and then we'll also talk about the budget, you know, cycle in general and what companies need to think about as they enter a new fiscal year. But you know, from your perspective, when you look at the market currently, what is the single most important factor for companies that are looking to maximize their opportunities, you know, in the fourth quarter?
I think that companies need to reflect on what they're selling, what their offerings are, and what the government's buying. And in the end, not to fret if it's not your sweet spot. If you're a large aerospace and defense contractor, this is probably not your sweet spot. If you're a reseller of IT product, it probably is your sweet spot. And that's when you ought to be paying a lot of attention.
Well, in that regard, you know, what should companies be watching? You know, I mean, we've heard a lot of, you talk about electronic systems like GSA Advantage or RFQs on eBuy, NASA Soup's new contract. You know, what are the things that companies should be watching?
Well, one of the things that I think that companies miss is the importance of PALT, the procurement administrative lead time. And so you're really looking at the policies of that particular buying agency. What kinds of lead time are necessary for a specific kind of procurement, whether it's the vehicle, whether it's the type of product or service, dollar value, dollar thresholds. And look at that history, because now as you're entering the fourth quarter, or we're in the fourth quarter, as you're looking at the potential for that last couple of weeks of buying, you need to be reflective on what that history means for you as a company. And I think that some of the things you look at in history are the extent of competition that that agency enforces. Sometimes there isn't much competition.
Funny how that works, huh? At the end of the fiscal year, right?
Yeah, particularly for those smaller scale procurements, which are typically gone to 8As or other small disadvantaged businesses. I think you also need to look at the nature of how that requiring agency does its contracting. In other words, do they use outside elements like a Fed bid or like a NASA or like a GSA FAS assisted acquisition? They use outside elements to actually conduct their processes, because that can sometimes derail a process for a particular procurement. And I think most importantly that you ought to be looking at the organizational climate in that agency. There are some agencies, there's one three-letter agency called OPM that's sort of on the hot seat right now because of a number of procurements.
I got my letter.
Yeah. Do you think you want to be selling to OPM right now? They're probably a bit distracted.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Within an agency, you know, it isn't just what's the current headline, you know, what current IG reports or congressional investigations, but it's also the nature of that agency's culture, their climate, their real organizational climate. You may not want to be doing business with an agency that doesn't have a really good climate.
Right. Well, that's like you're basically, you know, getting back to some fundamentals. Like you got to know your customer, right? You got to understand it's that business intelligence. One of the things about PALT that I always like to talk a little bit about is, especially when you're using a servicing agency and getting off the rails. Like, you know, many of them have cutoff dates.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Can you talk a little about what those are and what they mean for, you know, that procurement entity and what companies need to think about when they hear that term?
Yes. And you think about the kinds of transactions that typically happen in September. And many of them are small, smaller scale. They're less complex. They probably are going to be somewhat limited in competition. Those kinds of procurements, many of which are product-oriented, probably several months ahead of time is when that agency's user or customer internal should have been approaching procurement. If they don't, then they may not get their stuff, you know, bought by the end of the year. If it's something more complex, maybe it's back in February. And so I think that's what's important. You know, whatever you're selling, what are your offerings? You know, you need to be aware of what is the typical lead time needed for a nice, orderly acquisition.
Right. So in the case of something like Department of Interior, their Acquisition Services Directorate, which does procurements on behalf of other agencies, will have a date certain, like you've got to send us your requirement and your money by that time.
Yes.
And is that built on that organization's, you know, its PALT and how long it takes? So it had to be able to manage it, or is it a fiscal law issue that people are concerned about?
Well, you know, you can keep backing up things month after month, and pretty soon you're talking about yesterday, you know.
Right, right. Or last fiscal year, right?
That's right. You know, where you wouldn't have not had the money.
Right, right.
So you can get a little ridiculous on that. But what I've seen in my research is that the procuring agency is the one that enforces the PALT. The customer agency, or say the requiring agency, doesn't normally enforce some sort of PALT because it's not really a procurement from their perspective. You know, they're going to an outsider, a servicing agency, to actually conduct the procurement. But obviously, they need to be paying attention too. So if your customer is a requiring agency that will be using a servicing agency, like say Department of Labor using Department of Interior, you know, you need to take all that into consideration.
Right. And I have to ask you this. It's kind of interesting. It's like, you know, it's been called like whatever the, you know, the last day of the fiscal year, like September 30th. And when I worked at GSA, there was a lot of going on that day, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that day seemed to last a long time.
Well, in some cases, the clock stops at 11:59.
It sure does, didn't it? Right. Yeah, that's right. It's that 26-hour day, or you know, or even longer sometimes. Yeah. Do you have any insights on and you know what typically happens that day? How much is spent? And do you have any insights on that?
Many, many transactions. I mean, I've seen statistics saying, you know, $11 billion spent on that day. Yeah, but it's thousands of transactions, which are generally non-complex, lower dollar value, and should go forward very easily through your selling system.
Right, and are those things typically done on, those are orders as opposed to new contracts, right?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Right. Or you know, a simple purchase order, which could be a new contract, but very simplistic purchase.
Right. So do you have any suggestions for companies in terms of what they ought to be thinking about it, or things that they can do to be, if they're on GSA schedules, for example, and they're monitoring eBuy, or, you know, are there any tips that you have for them?
I always say it's important to plan for the right number of pizzas that you order in.
Okay.
So that you keep people at their desks, making the orders for all
something, day. That may be the best advice I've heard in several years with regard to the end of the fiscal year. How many pizzas you got to order, right? How many Diet Cokes or whatever,
right?
That's good. That's very good, Ray. And Ray, with that, we'll have to, and maybe we'll be selling some pizzas in our ad the next when we take this break. But my guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. And when we come back, actually, we'll be talking a bit more about the fiscal year, what it really means, what companies need to think when they're approaching the new fiscal year, which we are as we are in the fourth quarter, and now we're going to be approaching the next fiscal year. And what does that look like? You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. And we've been talking about budget. In a certain sense, the first segment, Ray, we talked a lot about the fourth quarter and what it means and what people need to think about, just sort of generally. I want to take a more expanded view and talk about, at the same time we're entering the fourth quarter, right? We're going to be entering a new fiscal year shortly. September 30th, or October 1st is right around the corner. Can you talk a little bit about some big picture, like what do the patterns look like for spending? How do agencies, money is allocated, but first just, looking quarter by quarter, is there a standard pattern of how funds get executed and obligated to contracts and spent?
Yes, there is. And, you can be pretty precise on actually measuring what happens month by month. But the pattern is pretty typical year after year because we've had continuing resolutions for so many fiscal years. The pattern is starting with a CR.
Right.
You just can't spend a lot of new money on new projects. And so things are pretty slow in that first quarter. But there's obviously stuff that is continuation of existing services or a large program that's building a system or product. So you get enough money to be able to sustain those particular contracts or exercise options. And when you get in the second quarter, maybe you're getting close to real appropriations. Although CRs are appropriations, but appropriations with a lid on it, obviously.
Right, right.
In that second quarter, you're more likely to see some of the larger projects, new starts, because that's typically when those final appropriations do occur. That means you're going to see the solicitation. You may not see the award, and those awards take weeks to months to actually execute. Now, in the third quarter, a little more of the same, but it looks more like what it should be in typical kind of business, where you've got orders coming in, orders going out. Fourth quarter can get a little crazy, obviously, because some money does expire at the end of the fiscal year, and there is a pressing need to spend it on requirements that are real requirements, but requirements that have been postponed throughout the course of the year. So now you see a much higher transaction volume, lower dollar value per transaction. It's just a different kind of selling model, and that's why I say companies shouldn't fret about the fourth quarter unless that is their sweet spot. And if they sell a lot of commodities or small packaged services, then that's when they ought to be thinking about lining up for that fourth quarter spend.
Right. So, and is there, do you have a sense or I'm sure you have the numbers, like just the percentage of funds that's spent in each quarter. I mean, it's obviously, given that we've had 17 or 18 continuing resolutions in a row, right? So that first quarter spends the percentage of overall addressable market's got to be smaller, right? And
it's not a quarter.
Right, right. It's definitely not.
It is more like 20%.
Okay.
Yeah, roughly 20%. I mean, that's a good rule of thumb. In the second quarter, you're a little more likely to see about 25%. And in the third quarter, it's going to be maybe just a little bit less because things are kind of smoothly rolling along. In the fourth quarter, you're more likely to see closer to 26, 28%. It depends on how the fiscal appropriations were set up during the year, when they actually occurred, and of course, what the overall budget is. And it depends a lot on what Congress says about particular programs. You know, one of the things that I think companies miss when they're looking at large programs and large program spending is the fact that Congress usually asks for a spend plan.
Right.
And they won't actually release money into the or permit Treasury to release money out of the appropriations until spend plans are approved on a regular basis, like almost on a, you know, every 6 weeks or so, you have to go bring your spend plan in. So that's for the major programs, but the smaller stuff, you know, once the money's appropriated, the agency has to be prudent about how they spend their appropriations, but it's up to them.
Right. Hey, so when you know, what was the, for this fiscal year, the current one, the addressable spend or addressable market for procurement, what was that number?
About $770 billion.
So does that include procurement and grants, and is that
no,
everything?
No, it's just contract spend.
Just grant, okay.
And, you know, you hear some of the pronouncements out of the government, well, you know, we spent $500 billion or $600 billion. Well, no, you spent more than that.
Because right, yeah, they're always throwing around numbers like 550 yeah. or like, and no, we just cut it another 40 billion, so it's 510, or now it's in 400s.
Yeah, well.
So how do they do their numbers versus the numbers you've got?
You know, it's funny because one time when I was doing this kind of analysis, my boss got a call from OMB, and they asked, where did he get these numbers? So my boss dragged me in the office and said, hey, tell him, OMB, where he got the numbers. I said, I got it from your own data. Oh, when I explain my methodology, they got it. They understand
okay.
it because I'm working from the budget,
mm-hmm.
not from spending. And when you typically hear the government talking about spending statistics, whether it's OMB, OFPP, GSA, you know, whoever it is, SBA, they're talking about what did FPDS tell us.
Right.
And not everything is reported in FPDS, certainly not the heavily classified materials. The procurements.
So, yeah, so you're really looking, from what you're telling me, you're looking at, here's the pot of money that Congress actually said
yes.
you have available to spend.
On contracts.
On contracts. And they're looking at, here's what's was recorded
what
reported. As, yeah, reported yes. or recorded as spent.
Yes.
And there's a big, so there's like, there's this, what would we call that? That stealth delta between what's actually reported and what's actually, you know, available to be spent and presumably is spent?
Oh, yes, it is spent. Definitely. Yeah, and there are times when I actually look at the raw Treasury data on what was actually obligated, because obligated and spent, there's a real finesse between those two terms.
Mm-hmm.
When you obligate money, you're basically fencing it for a
right,
particular
you record,
contract.
You're basically recording it on your books as an obligation. That
yes.
doesn't mean it's actually
liquidated.
Yes, and
yes.
then you know transferred to the contractor or whatever,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I got that. I did some fiscal law when I was in government. So, given it's continuing resolutions, and I guess, I don't know if we still have the budget agreement moving forward for the next few years, right? Whatever.
Yeah.
Do you see a flat, you know, number? Still, it's a big number, but is it going to be flat? Or do you foresee, got any predictions on where there might be growth? Cyber, for example, or?
2016, the number I'm pushing is about $767 billion in 2016. And that's just contract spending on existing contracts as well as new work. In that area, and that number's down from previous years. It's continually going down because of the sequestration caps
mm-hmm.
and what Congress considers their duty to limit the budget, and they don't control the budget, but they limit the budget allocations internally within Congress. And so appropriations committees respond accordingly and keep the lid on it. And that's why you look at the current appropriations bills, many of which are moving forward in the House, and you see a lot of Republicans voting for them and not as many Democrats.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, obviously there's a lopsided, you know, party ratio within Congress, But, you know, the Democrats are not happy with the continuing cuts because a lot of them are cutting social programs. But getting to your question, part of the question about the, you know, technology, some interesting spending.
Well, Ray, you know what? We're already up part on the break. So when we come back, you can pick up on who's going to be the winners and maybe some losers, what you see in your crystal ball with regard to next year's budget. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. And when we took the break, Ray, you were about to, I spilled the beans, I guess. I know you're looking, you have that pained expression on your face right now, but some quick thoughts on where you see potential areas of growth and possibly areas of reduction. I know the thing I mentioned in the last segment, cyber, obviously. And I also, if you've started to give any thought, you know, they announced another drawdown of the Army. And what does that mean? So I'll just turn it over to you and go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Secret sauce. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take a little different spin on this.
Okay.
Because.
You always do.
Yeah. There are a lot of commentators who talk about the IT market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really speaking more to technologies that the government's going to be buying and then the services surrounding those technologies. Certainly cyber is important. Other technologies, like in the military for ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, still very important. But when you look at where the government's going and the policies that come out of the budget, because a budget is a political statement, mm-hmm. policy statement, coming out of the White House. You look at the areas of emphasis. And one of the most intriguing areas of emphasis in 2016, and we saw this starting to happen in 13, 14, and 15, but in 16, there is a very high emphasis on advancement of commerce. Now,
okay.
So anything that's going to help American business and the American economy. Now, I'm sure there's folks like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce who would maybe disagree with this.
Sure, sure.
You know,
yeah.
But the administration has been looking for ways of improving the commercial posture of the economy. And to some extent, that means even protection of intellectual property. So money going into patent and trademark, money going into export controls and export enforcement, money going into the financial institution oversights, which, of course, many Republicans are not happy with either. But, you know, think about Dodd-Frank and where that spun up both SEC and eventually even actually created a new bureau, the CFPB.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emphasis, actually increased planned spending in those areas of supporting commerce. Now, that's what the president is asking for. What Congress ultimately gives the administration is going to be another question. And as I look at some of the appropriations bills as they are advancing through Congress, I can see that some of these initiatives are given short shrift. And some cases totally zeroed out. But you know, if there's a little bit of momentum in the administration, you're likely going to see momentum in contracting to be able to support that.
Okay. That's interesting. And does that also entail, you know, investments or, you know, on the grant side to support, you know, the development of new things? Is the administration emphasizing that as well? Do you see that?
No, I don't see that as much. I don't spend a lot of time studying grants, but mm-hmm. I do look at them particularly as some people call SBIRs grants,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But they really aren't. They're really a contract action. But you start to look at some of that planned spending on, say, areas of innovation.
Right. Yeah. That's a buzzword of the day, right?
Yeah, Roger and I have been joking about that word.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And when you start looking at that, those areas of emphasis, you know, and think back even to the beginning of the ARRA, the stimulus bill,
mm-hmm.
where there was money being spent on grants for green energy.
Right.
And there's a little of that still going on within the administration. So there's some of it, but it's not as strong as they plan contract spending and actually, in some cases, plan growth in the civilian workforce, be able to support some of those functions I've been talking about.
Okay. Do you have any last question on a budget? Do you have any thoughts? You know, they just announced a further drawdown of the Army, like another 40,000 troops, I think. What's the ripple effect of that from a sort of spending perspective?
It will take a long time to see the ripple effect in most of the contract spending. There's some immediate needs, whether it's a subsistence, you know, even you know, running a dining hall on a army installation. Much of that's done with contractors right now, so you'll start to see some of that. But you know, the momentum for some of the larger weapon systems procurements is not going to be slowing down anytime soon. In a couple of years, you know, so you got to be looking ahead. A couple of years, yeah, it will be slowing down.
Okay, that's helpful. Hey, you know, now I wanted to turn to another topic that I know you've been doing some research on, and it's, you know, the communication across the procurement community, the acquisition community. And, you know, there's a spike of it right now because people are trying to sell and other people are trying to buy and they're trying to do it by a deadline. But, you know, you kind of referred it to as the two major tribes, right? The contractors and the acquisition professionals in the government. And they're sort of more often than not at loggerheads. You know, can you just talk a little bit about why that is, or what you're seeing and what your research is telling you about why that, you know, what are the facts and circumstances around that?
Sure. And in the first segment, we were talking about the some of the things that companies ought to be looking out for. And I said one of them is the organizational climate. And this has a lot to do with the organizational climate. The fact that there are tribes, and you've heard other people in the government talk about tribes. There are culturally, from a skills discipline viewpoint, you know, different ways of kind of looking at an organization and seeing those breakouts into tribes. And when I talk about acquisition in the acquisition community, I mean the full spectrum from developing a requirement and documenting it and articulating it, all the way through process of getting the funding, all the way through the procurement activity and all the kinds of activities associated with procurement, and actually managing that contract, managing the project through its natural conclusion into closeout. So we're talking about a very long spectrum, and at different times along that that spectrum, kind of mixing metaphors here, but at different times in that life cycle, at different times in that life cycle, we see the one tribe being stronger than the other in terms of how they work within their agency. And the two main tribes I'm talking about across the spectrum are, on the one hand, the contractors or contracting officials and the attorneys supporting them. Like to pick on Roger because he's
I deserve it. So.
And the other major tribe are the program managers, the engineers, the logisticians, the people who are trying to execute on the mission. And when you look at these two tribes, they have differing lines of authority. Sometimes not necessarily different organizational lines, but different lines of authority. Contracting authority is a very specialized line that gives a contracting officer very much independent decision-making authority. There are a lot of program managers I've talked to in my career who would love to have a warrant. so that they could conduct their own contracts.
Right.
But, you know, they don't necessarily have the training, and they're typically not in that line of authority. Maybe in the same organization, but a different line of authority. And program managers typically are more in a mission-oriented line of authority, where that's what the responsibility is executing right. the mission.
Right. And, you know, right now we have to execute a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about what those lines of authority mean and why it leads to butting heads. And I've got to figure out during this break, you know, what to call the lawyers, because that's a separate tribe in and of itself. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. And Ray, when we took the break, you were about to get into, you were getting into the lines of authority of the the two tribes that you were focused on, which I find quite interesting because, you know, in my brain, I'm thinking about the bigger, I guess the, you know, I don't know, the two nations, like the contractors, maybe that's the right term, the contracting community, the contractors, and the government personnel. But to your point, and it is a great point, there's all kinds of different tribes, stakeholders, organizations that impact the procurement process. But I think, you know, none more important than that relationship between the requirements holder and the contracting personnel who are executing on their behalf. And those lines of authority do, I think, create lots of frustration between the two. But I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can talk about what you're finding.
Yeah, in my experience in the government and outside of the government, I've talked to program managers, and I was one too, who been very, very frustrated with the procurement system. You know, I've had a program manager working for me one time who had a responsibility for getting this one job, this $10 million job done in 12 months. We eventually did it in 13 months. Not too bad.
That's pretty good.
Considering.
Yeah, you'll get a gold star for that, right?
Yeah, we actually did get a gold star for that.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah, but she was very, very frustrated because the contracting official, the contract specialist in this case, was very stubborn, very hard-headed. And I would walk around the halls of the building and see them literally standing off, screaming at each other because mm-hmm. of that frustration. Because one side doesn't understand the other. One tribe doesn't understand the other tribe. And it is, I believe, really important. Now, if you can find the facilitator within the government that can speak both languages and create that bridge, you know, you've got a real gem in that facilitator. You know, but I just see it too many times. I remember one time I was running a murder board for a major acquisition, and I had engineers sitting there, and I had all the contracting people. I had general counsel, and we're all going through this the solicitation. I said, we're going to go through it page by page. And, you know, I had engineers saying, oh, rolling their eyes, and, oh, do I have to sit here? And I said, let's turn to Section H of the solicitation, and let's look at Provision H3. This is something engineers should be paying attention to, because this has to do with host nation engineering, on-the-ground infrastructure. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's because you didn't read the RFP.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, and then the contracting people would say, you know, this is miserable because these requirements are sloppy. They're not well defined. And I sat down and I said, have you ever tried to write the requirements for something new, something fresh, something innovative?
Uh-huh.
Not easy to do.
Right.
You know, you've got to develop some flexibility in the solicitation, in the contract structure that's going to enable exploiting that new technologies.
Mm-hmm. So do you see, I think that's very well put in terms of, you know, real life experiences of that, you know, divide between the two. Do you have a sense of how that divide can be bridged? Talk about using cliches.
Yeah, well, I think the facilitator, but, you know, I think it's really not just the tribes should know more about each other and about their responsibilities and the regulations, the constraints, the policies that they operate under. They need to understand a little bit more about organizational behaviors. But I think that beyond that, I think contractors who want to deal with those customers need to understand enough about both tribes to be able to help bridge the gap. And even in my experience, I had situations where I had some very smart contract program managers who were able to understand both sides and be able to actually facilitate what was going on in the government or not going on in the government. So I think it's really important to everybody. And I think that contractors need to be paying attention to this organizational climate issue. And I actually look at, you know, 8 judgmental factors: accountability, fairness, innovation, there's that word again, leadership, professional development, results, and strategy and teamwork. And when you find an organization that is falling down in a number of those areas, it starts to show up in the contracting activity. It is pretty fascinating. It's not a strong correlation, but it's one of those things that you ought to be paying attention to. And when my composite measures of some of these sub-agencies, there's one like a defense sub-agency I was looking at, you know, that is dropping, their overall composite score over several years is dropping about 1.8%. So, oh, big deal. Well, when you look at all these factors composite over the whole government, it's only dropping 0.8%. Now, that's an accelerated drop. It's an accelerated drop rate. And you start to look at that agency's procurement behaviors, and you start to see where they're not doing that much in terms of number of major actions.
Sure.
But you actually can see them using servicing agencies more and more, which tends to derail things. You see mm-hmm. them canceling procurements. Ooh, that's not fun because that hurts you as a contractor.
Right, right.
It's fascinating to watch how this thing unfolds. And there's even another sub-agency I'm looking at in one of the civilian departments who's much worse off than that. And we talk to people, hey, how do you like doing business with agency XYZ? And they'll say, oh God, I would never go touch them.
Right.
Well, it's interesting how the data actually shows that.
Yeah.
So now you can point to opportunities where you can start to make fixes. If you understand that organizational climate and what's going wrong, why the sense of accountability is dropping, why the right. sense of teamwork.
That's those 8 factors you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it right. is fascinating.
Yeah. And that seems to me that's something leadership in the government ought to be looking at, right? And just, I think they feel the pain. What?
Ought to be looking
yeah,
at it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, how many years have we been hearing ringing about woe is us in the procurement community?
Yeah.
Woe is us in the 1102s. Well, who's fixing this?
Right, right.
It's fun to talk about, but nobody's able to fix it in the government.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, there might be pockets of fixes at various agencies, but as a cross-cutting thing, no. It's interesting, too. I would have to say lawyers are a separate tribe in and of themselves. and I don't know what they are. Maybe they're cannibals. I don't know. I'm joking out there. But, you know, I think in my experience, both in the private sector and in government, is the frustration people have. Oh, the lawyers, they got to be involved, right? Whether it's the program people or the acquisition people. And it's whether it's the private sector and the public sector, it's just kind of fascinating the role they play.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty good relationships between contracting and lawyers, because when you look at contracting authority, again, it's really much based in the law as well as the FAR and all the supporting regulations. So, you know, it has a very legal foundation.
Yeah, it's very legal.
And I think there's more resonance between the contracting officers and the counsel of the agency than there is with the other tribe.
Right.
So that's why I kind of lumped the lawyers and the contract
dealers. I absolutely understand it. But I know that there's a lot of contracting folks who don't have those great relationships too,
I know.
Hey, just one real quick last question. I know we've mentioned innovation several different times, and so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about it. And it seems to me, it's one of the buzzwords of the day. But same observation about the acquisition workforce. There's a lot of talk about it. But do you see anything really being done that would promote innovation? Some of the things I think that are being done are maybe counterproductive, but your thoughts?
Well, I see the White House and some of the agencies promoting innovation by either bringing folks in from Silicon Valley or trying to find out best practices from Silicon Valley. And I keep saying Silicon Valley, and
right.
It's kind of unfortunate because, hey, in Washington, we got some pretty smart people too.
Right, yeah.
You look at this budget coming up in 2016, there's a big emphasis on digital services, not just the organization, the digital service core, whatever they're going to call it, that coming out of the White House and GSA. But really, each major agency is going to be setting aside $6 to $10 million to run something, whether it's through contracts or buying people. Now, where are they going to find all those people? Silicon Valley? And I keep saying that because, hey, I'm a Californian. I come from that area, and I understand that. But the innovation, the very smart entrepreneurial kinds of innovation that we see is a good stimulus for the government. But what is in place to actually facilitate that stimulus taking effect? We have lots of regulations, lots of laws, lots of oversight.
Oh, lots of oversight.
Lots of oversight.
Yeah.
And anytime somebody really starts to do something innovative, there's going to be probably a stumbling block in the way, whether it's oversight, whether it's, even limited appropriations.
Right. Yeah.
I had a finance guy working for me one time when I was in program management, and he's trying to tell an executive in the Department of Defense, we can take some of this money that we've set aside for reserve and we can invest it. And it's like, no.
Invest, that's
important. And she chewed his rear end on that. Because, hey, appropriations law kind of constrains what you can do. It was a smart idea.
Right. Right.
And we quickly pull him off the stage.
Right.
He wouldn't get killed.
Right. Well, hey, Ray, on that note, we have to end the show. I want to thank my guest today, Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.